It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, here on the Talk Station, taking your questions on our local numbers, too, at 247-7282 and an Onslow 353-4674. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. Good day, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good
morning, Ben.
Hope that all of you are doing well.
And, we are. Glad to be here.
We started talking about the Magistrate's Court, the People's Court, so to speak, last week. We're kind of working our way through the jurisdictions.
That's right. Just working up from one court to the next. You know, last week we did talk about that small claims court, magistrate court, just in general, went through the process and talked about how that is the court of the people, as we see on TV, the mm-hmm. people's court, Judge Judy, that yes. type situation. So that court is generally set up so that people can go in and take care of cases themselves without attorneys. However, sometimes it's advisable to have a lawyer in those type mm-hmm. cases, depending on how complex it is, or certainly if the other side has a lawyer, then it's probably a good idea to have your own counsel.
Because you're up to $5,000, so you may be in that range.
Jurisdictional limit of $5,000. But again, it depends on, you know, case to case, you know, whether you need counsel or not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, anyone who wants to go back and check on our website, harvellandcollins.com, can link into what we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. regarding the procedure. In the event you have a small breach of contract matter or a summary ejectment matter, eviction matter, those mm-hmm. kind of things, if you're dealing with that in any way, then there's some good information on last week's program regarding just the steps that you take through small claims court.
But when you get up into the $10,000 range or so, then you're talking a different animal.
That's right. As we move up through the state courts in North Carolina, and that's really what we're talking about. Of course, we have the federal courts in North Carolina as well, which we can talk about later. But the state courts would start at the trial court level, being the magistrate court or small claims court, with that jurisdictional limit being $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then we step up to the district court. And then we go to the Superior Court. Now, those are all of the trial court levels. And mm-hmm. then we have two courts of appeals where, of course, the higher courts of appeals are going to potentially review issues that were decided in the lower courts. And that's, of course, the North Carolina Court of Appeals and then the North Carolina Supreme Court. So mm-hmm. that's really the lock, stock, and barrel of the courts,
right.
state court system in North Carolina. Of course, we have, you know, administrative courts and other type of courts, special courts, business courts, those type things, which maybe that's for another program.
Yeah, sure. We're talking about the other ones.
But we do have those special type courts. But normally in your typical state action, you're talking about magistrate, district, superior, and then the appeals court would be North Carolina Court of Appeals, and then the Supreme Court.
I think people often get confused too when you start adding in criminal law. But we're talking civil.
We're talking civil lawsuits right now. Sure.
Well, Ben, each of these courts have a critical role in our justice system. No court is any more important than the other court. They dovetail together. The right hand and the left hand coordinate so that all sorts of matters can be heard. And, of course, it is true, though, that criminal matters are also, of course, heard in these courts that Wes just outlined. Now, the next one up from the magistrate court is the district court. The district court is, in fact, yet one of the other trial courts. One step up from the magistrate court, the jurisdictional limit is $10,000 for civil claims.
Mm-hmm.
It handles also, it handles really three primary things that are the most common things. All of your traffic offenses,
mm-hmm.
your highway, if you will,
sure.
traffic offenses, your driving while under the influence, of course, is one of those. It handles all of your domestic matters,
mm-hmm.
such as divorces, child custody, child support, alimony, anything having to do with family law. And let's not forget that the cousin of that is the juvenile court.
Mm-hmm.
Where young folks are many times placed in certain guardianship homes or
right.
or have certain protective orders to protect our young people, our folks who can't protect themselves. So the district court has civil matters up to $10,000, lawsuits that involve controversies of up to $10,000, breach of contract, failure to pay a claim, you know, anything having to do with a civil matter up to $10,000, anything having to do with a family matter, such as a divorce or a separation, child support, child custody, and anything having to do with our young folks in our community who are under the age or is known as the juvenile court.
Right.
So you do begin to see right there that there's a civil side
mm-hmm.
and there's a criminal side. There are criminal cases as well as civil cases within the context of the district court.
Now, the cash or the amount of award limit was $5,000 for the magistrate's court. Has that changed over time for district court too? I mean, did that?
Yeah, it's gone up over the years. And, you know, really technically the way that works is, you know, you file it in district court, your case alleging that, you know, whatever your damages are. And, you know, really, a lot of times district court judges enter judgments that are over $10,000. They have that jurisdiction,
okay.
you know,
okay.
to do that.
Right.
But in the event that a party wants to change jurisdiction as a result of the jurisdictional limit, then they can move the court for it to be, you know, transferred over to superior court, which is, you know, it's really unlimited as it relates to damages.
Yeah, because often you see in the popular press reported that of a minimum of $10,000 or over $10,000, they don't actually report the amount that's being
right.
sued.
And that kind of, you know, we go off on a little bit of a tangent on that, but, I mean, that's really under the rules of civil procedure, the way you're supposed to plead certain things.
Right.
Personal injury type cases, negligence cases, you're really not, you're not supposed to plead it. You know, I'm suing this guy for $10 million. In North Carolina, you're supposed to say, I'm suing this guy, not using those terms,
right,
but,
right.
The mountain controversy is,
greater.
Yeah, greater than 10,000, yeah. right.
Okay, so again, so in district court, you have up to $10,000. What's right. a typical kind of civil case that would come
in district
that?
Court?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of credit card cases, mm-hmm. you know, we really see a lot of the credit card companies come in and kind of bundle those up mm-hmm. under one attorney and handle a lot of, you know, those credit card type cases in district court.
Collections.
Yeah, collections. Probably what you see more than anything else would be appeals from the magistrate court though,
mm-hmm.
where under the magistrate court, you have an automatic right to appeal de novo, meaning you start over. In the district court. So I
right.
would say maybe even 40-50% of your civil matters that make it up to district court, are appeals from, you know, the lower level magistrate court that one party's not happy with the decision.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to take it up to that next level, for a trial de novo, meaning mm-hmm. a start over basically in the district court. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you, now in district court, I guess it would be higher than that, probably be superior court. When you have, disputes over land, for example, governments want to obtain a right of way or something like that.
Yeah, district court is usually not going to deal with those type matters.
Mm-hmm.
It probably would have jurisdiction depending on what the issues were, but that's usually if you're talking about title issues, land use, those type things, that gets a little more complicated. We get into proving title,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is a whole other show.
Yeah, eminent domain
so
issues.
Those cases right. typically end up in superior court.
Okay.
Yep.
But again, Ben, I think that it's important that our listeners know that and it's difficult to comprehend just hearing it from Wes and myself, but again, all of these courts dovetail together.
Right.
There's
right.
the goal of, you know, the perfect fit, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really cannot underestimate, you know, the court of family law. I mean, that is an extraordinarily
yes.
busy and very powerful and very significant court. I mean, that is the court that handles equitable distribution between husbands and wives when they are divorcing, that handles their child custody, it handles their child support. The list is just endless. I mean, that court, as one could imagine, is a very busy place. And then, of course, the court of to protect our young people who are underage, juvenile court, children who have been abused, children who are needing a home, children whose parents have died. died. Mm-hmm. And the guardian has not been appointed. You know, children who have committed a crime, but yet are not subject to the jurisdiction of Superior Court because they are, in fact, a juvenile.
Right.
You know, so all of those issues are within the context of the juvenile court.
Mm-hmm.
So again, very, very important issues, being determined in the district court. Very busy place.
We're kind of running through the family tree of courts here today, and so if you have a question or you would like to ask on this or any other legal matter that you would like to bring up, you can call us at 800-818-2255. That's toll-free. You can also reach us from Carter and Craven in Pamlico County, 247-7282, and from Onslow County, 353-4674. And don't forget to go to the website, too, at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome to the program here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station 747 and Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And we're talking about court jurisdiction and Wes talking about the district court. And let's talk about how you get into district court. What's the procedures there?
Right. It'd really be the same for all of the courts when we're talking about all of the trial courts when we're talking about how you get into court, how mm-hmm. the lawsuit starts, these type things. This is all controlled by the North Carolina Rules of Civil Procedure, and it's really similar to every other jurisdiction in the country.
Right.
Of course, to start a lawsuit, a complaint is filed.
Mm-hmm.
Summons is issued, and you're served with the summons and complaint. And if you've seen one before, which, of course, we've seen millions of them, and they state there on the front, as far as the summons, a civil action has been commenced against you, and then it
right.
talks about what you have to do. And basically in the complaint, it's just factual allegations, jurisdictional allegations, and then the claims for relief as far as what you're seeking.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a contract claim? Is it a negligence claim? Is it a land title claim? Is it an adverse possession claim? You know, what kind of claim are we talking about here? And that's the plaintiff's, you know, side of the case, of course, setting forth with some particularity, but it doesn't have to be overly particular in North Carolina unless you're pleading certain special matters like punitive damages or fraud.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to get into the real details. You just have to put enough in the complaint to put the other side on notice.
Well, because you have a discovery process, you still have to learn.
That's correct. Right. But the rule in North Carolina under Rule 9, if you're going to bring a fraud claim, for example, you have to state very specifically what the fraud is.
Right.
Okay. So, there is, you know, generally a notice pleading requirement on one hand, but on the other hand, you have to know that there are certain items that you have to plead with particularity or you're subject to dismissal upon motion by the other side. Kind of getting into the technicalities there too much, but nevertheless, you know, we're talking about the complaint being filed. And then once that's served, then the defendant, you know, basically has 30 days to answer that complaint or can ask for an additional 30 days and usually gets that without a problem. So, we're normally, upon filing a complaint in our office, waiting about 60 days until we get the mm-hmm. responsive pleadings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the responsive pleadings are just like an answer. It's
sure.
usually filed as an answer, the response to each of the allegations. Of
but
course,
this whole legal weight, too. I mean, right?
Oh, my goodness. Very, very important.
Yeah.
For example, your affirmative defenses, there's, you know, a number of affirmative defenses that you can bring. If you don't bring your, for example, statute of limitations defense. If you think the case is too old and they couldn't have brought it because it's after the statute and you don't bring that as an affirmative defense, you waive it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that.
You're out.
That would be a huge mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Your response to the allegations in the complaint. Okay. You know, if you admit something that maybe you should not have admitted, you're stopped.
Yeah.
You're there. You're at a point where, hey, you've admitted it. It's judicially admitted, and that can be used against you. Or if you don't answer in time, you could be subject to a default, which basically a default is just a determination that you have admitted everything
right.
has been alleged against you. So, you know, you really have to pay attention to these things. You know, obviously, when the complaint is filed, summons is issued, you're served. It's not just a matter of responding, you know, with a blanket statement. I mean, in most cases, you're going to have to really seek legal counsel unless it's a small claims matter, because a small claims matter is a little bit different. Don't have to file responsive pleading at all. And normally you don't have responsive pleadings. Basically, mm-hmm. the complaint gets filed. It's a very bare bones complaint. 10, 15 days later, we go to court and everybody has their say. And you can bring up whatever issues you want to, whatever affirmative defenses you want to in the small claims context. You get up to district court and superior court. Obviously, those courts are going to want to see the pleadings. You want to see right. what the parties have pled and what right. the responses are, what the affirmative defenses are, if there are any counterclaims, meaning mm-hmm. claims back against the plaintiff, or if there are any cross claims, like, okay, maybe I'm responsible, but if I am, this guy is responsible too, and I'm entitled to something from him. You know, so you've got to, you got to get those pleadings straight.
Mm. Now, who gets to decide whether or not it's a judge or jury trial?
All right, Ben, we're talking about the jurisdiction of the district courts here. Mm-hmm. To dovetail this together, the last court in the trial court setting is the superior court.
Mm-hmm.
And it, of course, is going to handle felony criminal cases,
right.
unlike the district court that was handling misdemeanor criminal cases. And then, of course, it's going to handle civil matters in amounts of controversy more than $10,000. So an unlimited dispute of a civil nature, you know, the big ones here, wrongful death, tragic accidents on the highway,
mm-hmm.
Personal injury cases, negligence cases, contracts for breach of sale of lands that are worth, you know, more than $10,000, which most land is now worth more than $10,000.
Yeah. Right.
So anything of a civil nature, mm-hmm. any kind of business proposition that went wrong between business partners, corporate actions, derivative actions, anything of a corporate nature, those are generally going to be more than $10,000. They're going to be civil in nature, and they're going to rest in the superior trial court.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind that the twin is the criminal side of it, which, of course, is are going to be your felony criminals.
More serious
so
crimes.
Your very serious crimes, robbery, burglary, murder, mm-hmm. rape, all of those are also going to be in the trial superior court.
Yeah.
So now you begin to see the total picture here. Hopefully our listeners are beginning to see that there's a magistrate court for small claims. There is a district court that handles matters such as the family law matters, juvenile mm-hmm. court matters, and smaller kinds of conflicts up to 10,000, all of the misdemeanors. And then the superior trial court or superior court of North Carolina, where the larger amounts in controversy are handled on the civil side and felony matters are handled on the criminal side.
We'll have more to come in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Remember the website, harvellandcollins.com. You can call for an appointment at 726-9050. Hey, welcome back to the program on Let's Talk Legal. We're talking about the court jurisdictions here with Cecil Nwess from Harvell and Collins mm-hmm. Attorneys at Law. And I'd ask that question before we got into the final kind of explanation of where Superior Court lies, is where does the jury trial fit in all of this?
Well, you have a right under just about every one of the issues we've just talked about in the different courts, except for in small claims court,
mm-hmm.
to request a jury.
Mm-hmm.
And for just about every issue, or at least the majority of issues that you'll deal with in court, you're entitled to, you know, a jury trial on those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was the person negligent? You know, those kind of issues. Now, there might be legal questions in the case where the judge makes a decision, but then the factual questions then eventually make it to the jury, and the jury answers those questions basically on a verdict sheet, and that tells us what the final result of the case is. But your question is more along the lines of, you know, how do you request that?
Yeah.
I mean, you put that in your complaint, and either party can ask for that. Of course, in the response by the defendant, they may ask for a jury as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you don't ask for a jury in your response of pleadings, then you waive it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or if you don't ask for a jury in your complaint, then you're going to, you know, waive that.
So you really got to measure that right up front.
Yeah, you got to think about that. I mean, you know, jury trials are more time intensive, work intensive,
mm-hmm.
Because you're picking a jury, you have to deal with that whole aspect of the case. Usually the rules of evidence run a little tighter when you're talking about a jury trial,
mm-hmm.
because the judge can't, if you're just having a bench trial, a lot of times the judge will hear a little bit more and let you be a little bit more broad as far as the evidence you put on, because the judge maybe wants to hear a little more and then is smart enough and educated enough
right.
to be able to
discern
dismiss yeah. from his mind the things that really would not be admissible
mm-hmm.
Or relevant or whatever the issue is with regard to the rules of evidence.
That's
a very important decision, though. In every case we deal with, whether we're on the plaintiff or defendant side, we do not take that lightly at all, and most attorneys don't.
Yeah, it seems like in a civil case, a jury selection or jury decision on a jury is a difficult one, because will they understand the complexities of the case? And
no question about that. But either party has that right to request. If the plaintiff doesn't request one, but the defendant does, hey, we're going to have a jury trial,
right.
and vice versa.
Hmm. Yep. Yeah, that's interesting. I think a lot of people who have been called for jury duty wonder how that happens, too.
Yep. It's really by the choice of the litigants and the attorney.
Hmm. Well, this is interesting because, also the connection between all these courts has been, as we've already talked
yes.
about a little bit, the appeals process.
Yeah,
as
well, there's just as I've said several times now, that all these courts are connected. They all have a purpose, and they are all very busy places. When you move out of the Superior Court, the District Court, the Magistrate Court, it is true that then hovering above all of these courts and their decisions is then our appellate courts, Court of Appeals and Supreme Court, who do not try cases, who do not hear evidence, but simply sit in a posture of reviewing the decisions of the trial courts and holding the trial courts to the case law and the statutory standards in North Carolina. And so, Ben, we'll talk a little bit more about that next week and how they fit, what their purpose is. But again, a critical part.
You can find out more by going on the website, too, at harvellandcollins.com, and call for that appointment with them as well at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.